Montreal's STM, increasing security presence in the metro. Family of Fredericton man who died while waiting in Emerge calls for change so it never happens again. A Canadian is evacuated from Gaza. Chrystia Freeland offers crumbs and calls it a buffet to address Canada's housing emergency. An outrage in Mali over the military government's refusal to restore power to civil rule. Good morning. It's Friday, April 12th. That's right. It is Friday. I'm Nora. Here are your headlines. We start this morning in Montreal, where the Société de Transport du Montréal, or the STM, has upped the number of security agents in its stations. Special constables and, quote, other safety employees, unquote, will be walking around in packs of four to, quote, unquote, monitor 10 stations where people have complained about, quote-unquote, uncivil behavior. Thomas McDonald from the Canadian Press cites Jocelyn Latulippe, who is the safety director for the STM. He says that the program will only last until the temperature rises and people seeking shelter will be able to leave the metro and go back to the streets. Though McDonald mentions that at Lionel-Groulx, a man was seriously injured by a pack of teenagers, presumably a group that will use the system in the summer as well. Latulippe does mention that, quote, ultimately a greater intervention by health and social services is needed to accompany people who need help to appropriate resources, unquote. And the president of the STM, Eric Caldwell, said that Montreal needs better housing supports, clinical follow-ups, and mental health services, as people ending up in the system are a downstream problem. Which stations will be targeted? Well, here's the list. Bonaventure, Beaudry, Papineau, Frontenac, Joliette, Atwater, Lionel-Groulx, Mont-Royal, Jean Talon, and Jerry. Montreal is dealing with an affordability crisis like everywhere else in Canada, though it took a bit longer to show up there. There has been no tangible actions taken by the CAQ to actually fix any of the roots of the problems, and in fact, they've chosen policies that will make things worse. Next to Fredericton, where the family of Daryl Michaud is calling for something to change so that no one else dies in an ER the way that he did. Back on July 12, 2022, Daryl died of heart failure after sitting in the ER room at the Dr. Everett Chalmers Hospital for almost 7 hours. His family thinks that had he been seen or monitored, he would still be alive. A coroner's inquest into his death wrapped up this week. Here are some of the details of what the ER was facing the night of Daryl's death. 52 people came to the ER looking for help between 7 p.m. and 5 a.m. There were only 26 beds total, though. 14 were ambulatory and 12 were acute. 17 of the beds had someone lying in them already, someone who should have been moved to another unit of the hospital. For the first half of the night, the staff were short 3 registered nurses, but had 2 practical nurses working instead. Then, the second shift of that time period, they were short 1 registered nurse. The New Brunswick Nurses Union said that there are simply not enough staff and that Band-Aid solutions are holding the system together. And Daniel Legere from the New Brunswick Health Coalition decried the use of private services to try and fill the gaps left by the staffing crisis. Now to news about evacuating from Gaza. The CBC is reporting that Faiza Al-Najjar has managed to get out of Gaza. She is a Canadian citizen, and the whole process took her about 30 days after she decided to leave family members who she was helping. Her home was completely destroyed. There's no reporting in the news clip. It's just footage of an interview with Al-Najjar, and she's mostly speaking in Arabic. All that it says is that she reached out to the Canadian embassy for help and that they helped her and her family to leave. It isn't clear where the video is even filmed, whether in Gaza or in Egypt or in Canada, though the outdoor images are either Gaza or Egypt based on, you know, the palm trees. There is an image of a bus that people are getting on that is played over top of Al-Najjar's interview. The bus is called Abu Ulba for Tours and Transportation. When I looked that up, I found that UNRWA has a contract with this company for $16,000 for transportation, storage, and mail services in Palestine. So I guess that's where the interview happened. It looks like Al-Najjar is not out yet, certainly not in Canada yet. And while there's no other information about her online at all, when you search her name, there's nothing at all. I imagine more will be reported soon. It looks like CBC actually just got video from a journalist in Gaza with Al-Najjar about being given the right to leave. And by the way, to write what you just heard took me going through this 2-minute interview enough times that CBC forced me to watch a set of ads 4 different times. So thanks for that, public broadcaster. Next, there has been another announcement on the government's pre-budget roadshow. This one, as reported by Peter Zimonich from CBC, promises to give people, quote, housing affordability measures for first-time buyers, current owners, unquote. Or so claims the headline. Well, that first promise that Zimonich mentions is that we can borrow against our RRSPs to get a house down payment, which is funny because it assumes that someone who can't afford to save for a mortgage is saving for something even more theoretical called retirement. But hey, you can now liquidate your RRSPs up to $60,000 to pay for your first home. Previously, that amount was limited to $35,000. Freeland claims that this plus a tax-free savings account will, quote, give younger Canadians more tools to save what is actually needed, unquote. Lady, it isn't tax that's stopping people from affording to buy a house. It's the cost of the homes and the rate of salaries that people are earning. I am bored even explaining this. A young person who has money in an RRSP of up to $60,000 is the kind of young person that has the ability to save $30,000 for a down payment on a home. They don't need a tax-free saving account because that just assumes that the total salary that they're making is enough to afford a house, which we know it's not. Now, let me tell you a little bit more about these tax-free accounts. You can open something now called a tax-free first home savings account too. That will let you save all the money that you are currently not saving to get a down payment on a house. But you will have to pay back the RRSP money that you withdrew over 5 years. That's new too. Right now, the rule is 2 years, the current rules. But can you imagine that you're paying back your mortgage, but then you also at the same time have to pay back your RRSP? Do these people think that money like is magic or something? Well, to make it even worse, you can also spread your money out longer through your mortgage so that you'll pay more in debt, pay more to the banks, and have the privilege of having that down payment. It's great news for the banks who will be able to charge more money for the mortgages. And it's great news for democracy, broken democracy, because people will be indebted longer. Remember that Canada's total national debt is larger than its GDP, okay? We have a debt crisis and the Liberals are like, woohoo, let's make it worse. There are a bunch of other changes too that are kind of funny that are even being deemed as all that helpful. Stuff like a bank must call you 24 months before your mortgage is up for renegotiation rather than currently it's 6 months before. That's supposed to, I don't know, help people afford mortgages more. There's other tiny changes too, which feel like overall do nothing to actually make housing more affordable. Lenders lauded the decision to allow people to get even further into debt. Now, what's irritating is that there isn't a single voice in the story pointing out the obvious, that these are ridiculous changes and should not be called measures that will make home ownership more affordable or accessible. Nothing announced will actually do that. But nah, instead we get journalism that dances around the facts. And everyone asks, what is to be done? We don't know how to fix the housing crisis. As if we don't know that the big thing we need to do is remove profit from a huge chunk of home building in this country and impose housing price controls. But CBC's not going to quote anyone saying that in an argument that's promoting the Liberal promise. And finally, to Mali. The country's political parties and civil society groups are decrying the fact that the military government has not called for elections within a time frame that had previously been proposed. The junta has said that they are decreeing an end to all political parties and groups' activities to maintain order and has asked media to stop promoting political activity on their networks. Colonel Assimi Goïta argues that the military government's initiative of a national dialogue on the future of Mali cannot happen amid the cacophony and confusion spread by political parties. Parties and activist groups called for the military regime to hold presidential elections as soon as possible to return power to civilians, reports TV5 Monde. The military government is also fighting jihadists and independence movement activists, for which they've relied on help from Russia increasingly to manage what has been a failure of decades of Western interventions. Those are your headlines for Friday, April 12th. I'm Nora. You're listening to this podcast at sandyandnora.com, on the Real News Network podcast feed, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Don't forget, get your tickets for the Edmonton show, which is coming up in just over a week at the Citadel Theatre. Tickets available at the Citadel Theatre box office. Don't delay. We want to see you. It will be fun. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and I will talk to you on the other side.